Translation of Prabhupada by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Translation. From the mode of goodness, the mind is generated and becomes manifest. As also the 10 demigods controlling the bodily movements. Such demigods are known as the controller of directions, the controller of air, the sun god, the father of Daksha Prajapati, the Ashvini Kumaras, the fire god, the king of heaven, the worshipable deity in heaven, the chief of the Adityas, and Brahmaji, the Prajapati, all come into existence. Prabhupada by Srila Prabhupada. Vaikarika is the neutral stage of creation, and Tejas is the initiative of creation, while Tamas is the full display of material creation under the spell of the darkness of ignorance. Manufacture of the necessities of life in factories and workshops, excessively prominent in the age of Kali or in the age of the machine, is the summit stage of the quality of darkness. Such manufacturing enterprises by human society are in the mode of darkness, because factually there is no necessity for the commodities manufactured. Human society primarily requires food for subsistence, shelter for sleeping, defense for protection, and commodities for satisfaction of the senses. The senses are the practical signs of life, as will be explained in the next verse. Human civilization is meant for purifying the senses, and objects of the sense satisfaction should be supplied as much as absolutely required, but not for aggravating artificial sensory needs. Food, shelter, defense, and sense gratification are all needs in material existence. Otherwise, in his pure, uncontaminated state of original life, the living entity has no such needs. The needs are therefore artificial, and in the pure state of life, there are no such needs. As such, increasing the artificial needs, as is the standard of material civilization, or advancing the economic development of human society, is a sort of engagement in darkness, without knowledge. By such engagement, human energy is spoiled, because human energy is primarily meant for purifying the senses in order to engage them in satisfying the senses of the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord, being the supreme possessor of spiritual senses, is the master of the senses, Hrishikesh. Hrishika means the senses, and Isha means the master. The Lord is not the servant of the senses, or, in other words, he is not directed by the dictation of the senses. But the conditioned souls or the individual living entities are servants of the senses. They are conducted by the direction or dictation of the senses, and therefore material civilization is a kind of engagement in sense gratification only. The standard of human civilization should be to cure the disease of sense gratification. And one can do this simply by becoming an agent for satisfying the spiritual senses of the Lord. The senses are never to be stopped in their engagements, but one should purify them by engaging them in the pure service of sense gratification of the master of the senses. This is the instruction of the whole Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna wanted first of all to satisfy his own senses by his decision not to fight with his kinsmen and friends. But Lord Sri Krishna taught him the Bhagavad Gita just to purify Arjuna's desire for sense gratification. Therefore, Arjuna agreed to satisfy the senses of the Lord, and thus he fought the battle of Kurukshetra as the Lord desired. The Vedas instruct us to get out of the existence of darkness and go forward on the path of light, Tamasi Ma Jyotirgama. The path of light is therefore to satisfy the senses of the Lord. Misguided men or less intelligent men follow the path of self-realization without any attempt to satisfy the transcendental senses of the Lord by following the path shown by Arjuna and other devotees of the Lord. On the contrary, they are artificially try to stop the activities of the senses, yoga system, or they deny the transcendental senses of the Lord, jnana system. The devotees, however, are above the yogis and the jnanis because pure devotees do not deny the senses of the Lord. They want to satisfy the senses of the Lord. Only because of the darkness of ignorance do the yogis and jnanis deny the senses of the Lord and thus artificially try to control the activities of the diseased senses. In the diseased condition of the senses, there is too much engagement of the senses in increasing material needs. When one comes to see the disadvantage of aggravating the sense activities, one is called a jnani. And when one tries to stop the activities of the senses by the practice of yogic principles, he is called a yogi. But when one is fully aware of the transcendental senses of the Lord and tries to satisfy his senses, one is called a devotee of the Lord. The devotees of the Lord do not try to deny the senses of the Lord, nor do they artificially stop the actions of the senses, but they voluntarily engage the purified senses in the service of the master of the senses, as was done by Arjuna, thereby easily attaining the perfection of satisfying the Lord, the ultimate goal of all perfection. Om Agyana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parichana Chaitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrinda Vaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatta Deshatarine Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasati Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Hare Krishna everyone. It's good to be back in the manor and have the opportunity to serve the devotees. I haven't given class in some time, so I may be a little rusty, but I'll try my best also. And please, I seek the blessings of all the Vaishnava devotees, and so we can all glorify the Lord and also develop love for Him together. And hopefully this class is also pleasing to Srila Prabhupada and Krishna. So we're talking about creation also, and some of you probably have lots of questions about creation, and we can discuss that at the end of the class or after the class. The interesting thing I saw when I saw this verse is that the translation is completely different from the purport. Translation, it's saying, from the mode of goodness, the mind is generated and becomes manifest. And then the 10 controlling demigods of bodily movements. And in the purport, Srila Prabhupada he gives one line of creation. He gives this one line. Vaikarika is the neutral stage of creation, and Tejas is the initiative of creation, while Tamas is the full display of material creation under the spell of the darkness of ignorance. That's the only line referring to creation that I could see that's in the purport. And the rest of the time he's talking about how ignorant we are in the material modes of nature, especially tamagun and being bewildered by Mother Nature. So it's very nice. I was reading this text with Yuli Prabhu the other day, and he made me understand also there's a huge vast difference. And this is Srila Prabhupada's mood. You know, he's utilizing everything just to repeat again and again that we're all rascals in the material world. Even if the translation is about the mode of goodness, you're not in the mode of goodness. We are not in the mode of goodness. So the purport, as I understood it, is talking about how the current civilization is producing so many false necessities of life. And it does say in factories and workshops, but they also produce advertisements in factories and workshops, and they produce not just items, objects, but it's also producing a certain mindset for the society. And while I was reading this, I was thinking that the four regulative principles are also what we don't need in society. We obviously, Srila Prabhupada is saying, we need food, shelter, we need sleeping, and we need defending and mating. But we don't need illicit sex, we don't need gambling, we don't need intoxication, and we don't need meat eating. So from what I understood, maybe we can discuss it also, that Kali Yuga, the people in Kali Yuga are manufacturing this false need to break the four regulative principles. It doesn't mean it has to, for at least me, it doesn't mean it has to be manufactured in a factory or a workshop, but they are increasing the mentality of that. And we know that Kali also resides in those four places. So as soon as the increased need of false enjoyment in these four places arise, then quarrel and hypocrisy come naturally. So it was quite interesting. I did because I missed so much of coming to the manor, I kind of lost the storyline a little bit. I mean, I know we're in creation, but I took some time to just recap. So I like it when in the beginning of a class we recap. So in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, we have many, many sages performing a 10,000-year-long yajna. So we're just going together through where we're going now, because it's a little confusing for me. And so these sages of Naimisharanya give Suta Goswami the seat, the Vyasa-san, they give Suta Goswami the seat. And then they start questioning Suta Goswami, and it's mainly on the Lord's activities, his qualities, his the science behind the Lord. And Suta Goswami takes that opportunity to glorify devotional service. That's where the second chapter, divinity and service, or like that. Or a little further on. And then Vyasadeva comes and Vyasadeva comes into the picture, and we understand how he's creating the Srimad Bhagavatam. Narada is inspiring him and chastising him, because Vyasadeva is not talked about the spiritual aspect of knowledge, the aspect of the soul and devotional service. And he hasn't glorified Krishna, but he's talked about the modes of material nature only. So he gets chastised, and I don't know why I'm smiling. Chastisements are fun also. They're good. Then we immediately go into Mahabharata, where Drona is getting punished. So the war is over, and now Drona is getting punished. Ashwatthama is getting punished, Son of Drona is getting punished. And then it takes till the end of the Canto 1, it goes to Parikshit Maharaj being cursed. So after the battlefield, Dhritarashtra leaves home, also Pandavas leave, and Parikshit Maharaj is taken as the king, and then he is being cursed. And then the second canto begins. That was the first canto. Second canto begins, and the Shukadev Goswami meets Parikshit Maharaj, who's looking for guidance, who's looking for help. And he immediately takes the opportunity to ask Shukadev Goswami, what should one do at the time of death? What should one focus on at the time of death? And the reply from Shukadev Goswami is one should focus on the super soul. One should focus on the Supreme Lord within the heart. For neophyte devotees, Virat Rup, and further Krishna, the Supreme Lord, Bhagavan. And the best path is the path of devotional service. And then Suta Goswami is asked by Shonaka Rishi, what did Maharaj Parikshit respond to that? So he's got the answer again, devotional service. And now the questions Maharaj Parikshit is asking is all about creation. How did the Lord maintain, create? How does he annihilate the universe? What's your position, Brahma? You know, who are you in the universe? You're doing so much tapasya. Why are you going through austerity? God doesn't need to go through austerity. There's one quote by a German philosopher. He said, "I will only believe in a God who can dance." I was thinking that's pretty cool. I don't know what if he knew about Krishna, but that's pretty cool. So God doesn't have anything to do. So why are you doing something, Brahma? So Brahma takes the opportunity to glorify Krishna and say that all of his inspiration is coming from Krishna. And now he's systematically answering the questions about creation. So that's where we are today, learning about creation. I think, did that help? Kind of, I don't know, it helped me at least when I was researching that. this is about, obviously, tamas and how we're not taking care of the soul, we're taking care of the body. And it's a temporary body, so we need to focus on the right thing. We need to focus on the bird inside the cage. We need to focus on the roots, not the leaves. We need to focus on the stomach, not feeding the fingers, trying to enjoy, like babies try and, you know, like have fun with food. But you can only, they need to eat it at the end of the day also. So nowadays, I did some research also. There's in the world right now, there's 10 million factories producing pollution. And approximately 280 million people in the world have depression. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to smile, but that's just the facts. Stats for the number of people distracted is, what's it called? In the workplace, sorry, I didn't get that. Sorry, less than 8% of people actually stick to their New Year's resolutions. So the rest is distraction. So I don't know if you were one of them. I mean, we made a really good New Year's resolution, join Krishna consciousness. So the society is creating so many false needs, but when we understand what the goal of this world is, many people on the streets also know, I'm here to learn. I'm here to, you know, make mistakes. I'm here to enjoy, but I'm here to learn and grow. That's the usual way people understand what life is. I'm going to go through these experiences and I'll become a good person, or I'll just become a person depending on my experiences. But, if we have the answer to why we are in the situation in the first place, then we can go to the goal faster. So, for example, a prison house it has rules and regulations. And if you violate the rules and regulations in the prison, you obviously get a longer stay, right? So imagine a prisoner in the prison. He opens up a shop in the prison and he's selling golden chains and golden spoons and, you know, golden toilets and like plates and everything. And everyone's really interested in it because it's gold and shiny. And they spend their time trying to get these commodities, not raw commodities, false needs. So now everyone in the prison has gold chains, gold plates and cups, but they're still in the prison, right? So in the same way, we shouldn't be distracting other people by making so many factories and false necessities of life. We should rather aim to leave the material world. Having golden chains and a gold nice apartment and having PlayStation apparently in your room in prison, it doesn't help you to learn the lesson faster. You may just be distracted. The goal is to get out of prison. That's what Srila Prabhupada is saying. And when we have so many, when we have so many distractions in life, we can't focus on devotional service. Bhogeshwari prasaptanam taya prahitra pahrita chetasam vyavasayatmika buddhi samadho navadiyate. In the minds of those who are too attached to sense enjoyment and material opulence and who are bewildered by such things, the resolute determination for devotional service does not take place. Instead, we sleep on the lap of Maya and she is sucking our blood. It's a quote by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, jiva jago, Gora Chandra bole, kota nidra jao maya pisachira kole. Oh, Lord Gauranga is calling, wake up, wake up. Get off the lap of Maya. Your blood is being sucked. Like camels, they chew on thorns and their mouth starts bleeding, but they think it's enjoyment. So the same way we're thinking this world is enjoyment. But the answer that Srila Prabhupada is giving is very nice. He says that the human civilization is meant for purifying the senses and to cut down artificial needs. So I took that as understanding as devotees practicing Krishna consciousness, we've diminished our propensity or desires for the four regulative principles, or breaking the four regulative principles. But also Srila Prabhupada doesn't want us to just stop those four things. He wants to help everyone in the world take one step closer. He wants everyone in the world to take this principle, Isha Vasyam Idam Sarvam, Yatkincha Jagatam Jagat, Tene Tak Tene Bunjata, Magrita Kasi Sudanam. He wants to help everyone to not be greedy. He wants everyone in the world to follow the prison how it's supposed to be followed. He wants to remove the shops of false necessities, and he wants people to start Varnashram, simple living, high thinking, like the manor is so nicely doing for everyone. We saw in the last Brahmachari class, we were watching The Lost Village by Loknath Maharaj on YouTube. Very, very nice film. Anyone can look at YouTube and they'll type in The Lost Village by Loknath Swami Maharaj. And he's endeavored so hard to tell us the importance of keeping simple and keeping in the village. And it's nice, the old women are grinding the grains and they're like churning the butter and the boys are learning Vedic philosophy. It's exactly how it was in the Vedic times, actually. And so Loknath Goswami Maharaj is trying to get that back to us. He's trying to give us the understanding that that's what we need. And even, one experience I had, as brahmacharis, we go through training also, or brahmacharinis, we go through training to try and reduce our needs. And Shishi Radha Gokulananda ki jai, Shishi Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai, Shishi Gonitai ki jai. When I joined the Brahmachari Ashram 3 years ago, I didn't read the Brahmachari book. There's a book for Brahmacharis. And it's for everyone, really. Srila Prabhupada said that everyone should be Brahmachari. But the point is in here, not externally also. And so when I came to the manor, I was getting Brahmachari training 2 years ago. And Ananta Gopal Prabhu, senior devotees, they were helping me. And one time Ananta Gopal Prabhu came to me, he said, actually, I saw him in the loft where the bags are, the suitcases, where all the necessities of life are. And he's going through his suitcase and he's taking stuff out, he's checking it, and he's putting it aside. Or he's putting it back in the suitcase. And I'm just watching him for a moment. And he says, come in. And I ask what he's doing. He says, every month I clean out what I haven't touched in that month. And anything I haven't touched, it goes to someone else. Like this maha item goes to someone. It's gifts. This cloth goes to someone else. And he said, that's what we should also do. He also instructed me that day to try and do that. And I started to do that 2 years ago. And it's really nice. It's a really nice feeling to just own, not really own nothing, but nothing is owning you. Nothing you, it's like that's what renunciation really is. Renunciation doesn't mean you own nothing, but nothing owns you, actually. So I started learning that. And it's how you use things. It's not really, you know, electronics, for example, in these factories and workshops, iPads. You know, I think everyone nowadays has an iPhone. Even if they're brahmachari or a devotee of Krishna, they also have these iPhones and these tablets and whatnot. In devotee families, you need these things also. But what are you going to do with it? You're going to play little Krishna for the children. You're going to put on nice devotional activities for the children. And for us, we'll use it for service. So it's a Yukta Vairagya principle. Prapanchikataya buddhya hari sambandhi vastuna mumukshubihi prityago vairagyam falgu katyate. In the Act of Devotion, it says what real renunciation is. And Srila Prabhupada is saying that the elements, what we have right now, fire, water, air, ether, everything in the body, that needs maintenance. But the soul is made of Satchit Anand. So how can you maintain Satchit Anand? What does that need? Okay, earth, water, fire, air, ether needs food, shelter. What does Satchit Ananda need? What? It needs?
Devotional
service. Yeah, devotional service. Chanting Krishna, it needs love. It needs pure love. So when we understand that we're not the body, we're the soul, we can start to really relish what is actually needed and take what the body needs only for service. Like Sudama Vipra, Krishna's friend, or I'm not sure if it was Vipra, but Krishna's old school friend, he was very skinny. He was living as a brahmana with his wife. And one time his wife said to him, your friend when you were a child was Krishna, and look how opulent he is. So please go to see him and ask, you know, if he can help us. Because we're kind of, you know, like, I can see my ribs, Sudama, like, what's going on here? Like, they're in a terrible condition, actually. And so Sudama is not interested in really asking anything from Krishna. But he goes anyway because his wife tells him that's how the world works. And so he goes to Dwarka and he sees Krishna and they have a loving exchange. Krishna washes his feet. They have beautiful exchanges between devotee and the Lord. And everyone is wondering, who is this brahmana also? And Krishna's crying, he's sat Sudama on his bed, he's treating him like a king. And after a few initial exchanges, Sudama remembers why he was there, but he doesn't want to say anything still. But Krishna sees, now when you go to a person's house, you give them some gift. So actually Sudama bought some flat rice, chip rice. So Krishna pointed to Sudama's shoulder and he snatched chip rice off his back. And he said, what's this? And Sudama's like, oh my God, what do I do? And so Krishna actually opens it up immediately, and he's saying, you made me this chip rice? It wasn't like opulent. It was just plain, dry, you know, chip rice. And Krishna's ecstatic. Krishna's really, really happy with the service that he's been given. And he takes one piece of chip rice, and he puts it in his mouth. And at that point, it's almost like the whole world is satisfied. I think the same thing happened with Draupadi in Draupadi pastime when Krishna helped her with Dhruvas Muni. And he was ecstatic when he took that one piece of chip rice that he wanted to take one more. And at that time, Rukmini took his hand. She said, no, you can't take one more. If you take one more, you won't be able to repay anything. You've already become so ecstatically in love with Sudama And if you take one more, you won't be able to reciprocate on that level with what he's doing for you. And so Sudama still doesn't say anything. He takes his leave after some time. And he goes home. And when he comes home, he doesn't see his home anymore. He sees a kingdom. It was like a small village, whatever, some few houses. Now it's a kingdom. And his wife comes out, who is normally dressed in, you know, plain clothes. She's wearing the most opulent dresses. And so we can learn from this story, actually, that Sudama Vipra didn't want to have the necessities of life. He was wanting just the bare minimum. But because of his devotional service to Krishna, because he didn't have any desire for material enjoyment or excessively, aggressively enjoying unnecessary things, Krishna gave him opulence. So that's what he does to his devotees. When you're ready, if he gave me opulence, for example, and I got a kingdom in my backyard, what will happen to my bhakti, or what happened to my potential bhakti? What will happen to me? You know, we can understand that Krishna only gives you something when you're deserving for it. So that's what Srila Prabhupada is saying. We should be deserving for it. We should also reduce our need for these commodities. We've taken a path of, I was talking to some devotees, yes, I won't mention names, but they're asking, why am I in this, you know, this place? You know? Why am I in Brahmacharya Ashram? Why am I here? Am I doing it to run away from Maya? I don't want the responsibilities. Am I doing it because I'm comfortable here? And we started talking. And then Ananta Gopa Prabhu, again, his grace, he comes in, and the same question goes to him. He says, you know, am I doing this for the right reason? And Ananta Gopa Prabhu says, the Brahmacharya Ashram is not a comfortable place at all. You have to sleep on the floor, you don't get to choose what you eat. But he understood that this person who was having struggles or looking at his, or introspecting, he was having bliss. He felt like it was comfortable, even though it's so austere. So as devotees, we are in an austere place or austere practice of Krishna consciousness. We're all sitting on the floor. You know, so many things we don't even realize. If we're outside, sitting on the floor is like, what are you doing? You're homeless. We're all sitting on the floor. We're having like bed sheets around our body, you know, with little embroidery for the women. What is this? So we're living a life of austerity, but it doesn't feel like austerity because we're doing it for Krishna. We're actually fulfilling our spiritual desires. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, however, says that although we are in this austere place, but we have potential service for Krishna, we can enjoy prasadam. We can enjoy prasadam to our fullest extent. Apparently, that's the only sense gratification we're allowed. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that, however, even if one accepts prasad because it's palatable and thus eats too much, he's also praying, he's failing. He's failing because he's given prey to his senses. Or if one goes to too many house programs because the devotees are cooking such nice prasadam, he's coming prey to his senses also. So even in devotional service, no matter how austere you are, there's levels of austerity. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was giving that guidance that you can enjoy material senses even while you're in devotional service. That's the opposite way of yukta vairagya. That's like using Krishna to enjoy or not using things to give to Krishna. So this point is helping us to understand that even in Krishna consciousness, we have to be careful that we are keeping our needs to a minimum, basically. And if we're taking care of the body so much, we may just not experience the satisfaction that the soul can truly give. And how can this help others? How can this purport help others in the path of Varnashram or path back to Godhead? If one has a lot of faith in Maya, for example, on the streets, you see many people on Sankirtan, they have like, no, this is the life. This is what I want to do. This is what I want to enjoy. You can't say, no, that's not right. Of course you can in the heart, but for them, they're not ready. But what Bhagavad Gita says is engage them in devotional service. Don't disturb their faith. If they're in another religion, especially if they're really, really strict, actually just utilize their skills for coming to the temple and seeing the deity and doing some service. They can carry on enjoying, no problem. No, of course, we know it's terrible. But they can carry on, no problem. But at least come and start the process of devotional service. I can understand, in my understanding, that's how we can train people in Krishna consciousness to gradually come to the level of purification. So we're coming to time soon also, but before we end, there's one more point that Srila Prabhupada is making, that Krishna is the master of the senses. He's Hrishikesh. And he says that this human form of life is the opportunity to render service to Krishna. Krishna's not impersonal. He's not a light and Brahma Jyoti. And if we like the Jnanis are thinking that, for example, the mental speculators. But if I say to someone, your father is a ball of light, would you appreciate that? Your father is a ball of light, like a nice globe. It's light, beautiful Brahma Jyoti light. He's a ball. Right, you came from a ball of light. He has no feelings. He has no aspect of interaction. Your father, sorry, Saishpur, your father. he has no features. He has no bodily features. He has nothing to do with. There's no interaction. Then how can he be called omnipresent, omnibenevolent? How can the word omnibenevolent be assigned to a ball of light? Because we learn in scriptures, in many other religions also, in Christianity even, the Supreme Lord is omnibenevolent, omnipresent, omniscient. How can a ball of light be that? Without a brain, without some substance, without something at least spiritual substance. So it's like the Jnanis or the impersonalists, they're accepting God, but they're walking straight in front of him and not even caring for his appearance or for his presence or his existence. It's like if you're trying to make a friendship with someone, you try and talk to them, right? You say, hey, what's up? And they just blank you and they walk past. You know, and you're like, you're giving them so much time and attention, you know, but they just walk past you. Like, that hurts. It's better if you get angry at them or display some emotion to them or hit them even. They'd like that better. But if you just walk past them in an impersonal way, whoosh, like they may even leave Krishna consciousness. You know, they may even, I mean, neophytes anyway, but they may even get so hurt because devotees don't do this. Devotees are not impersonal. So we should, from this point of denying Krishna's senses, we shouldn't deny the devotee's senses either. Devotees have feelings. Devotees, we shouldn't just walk past. Is this offensive? We know you, they exist, but I don't care about you. Straight through your body, sir. That's what the Jnanis are doing to Krishna. That's why they are so offensive. They're so offensive. But instead, to wrap up, in the prison, if you're a prisoner in the prison house and you want to get out quicker, the option is to behave, right? So Bhakti Charamar says in his lectures many times that a prisoner, after coming to understanding that he is not supposed to be in the prison, he's done a mistake, a good idea is to send a letter to the government, send a letter, a written letter to the king or queen, saying, I've made a mistake, please forgive me, please allow me to be purified from my mistake and actually render service and become a better person. So the apology letter is sent through the security and it's mailed. The queen opens it up. She says, oh, this rascal is giving me a letter. What's he saying? She reads it. And it's all about apologies and it's all about trying to be sincere. And she takes note of it, but she doesn't do anything at that time. She doesn't say, oh, now he's out of the kingdom, now out of the prison, and he's back in normal life. No, she's got an understanding of his mind, but she wants to see action. So now she sent guards, so this is Bhakti Charamaj's analogy, she sent guards to keep a close eye on him and see what he's doing. So now guards are there in the prison, and they're watching this prisoner, how he's developing, if it is bona fide according to the letter he sent the queen. And so that's our choice right now. So we have a choice. We've just surrendered. We tried to come to Krishna consciousness. We just surrendered to Krishna. But are we acting like that? He's watching us now. Are you sincere? And if we are sincere, then after some time, we'll be given, not freedom just yet, we'll be given facility. Because the queen understands that this person is a good person. Let me utilize him or her to be an example now to the rest of the people. So that person can become a role model for all of the prisoners. So what does she do? She gives that person attention, a little bit more attention. She gives him facility. Maybe he's boosted up to some kind of responsibilities in the prison. Managing roles, Sankit Prabhu. different responsibilities because she trusts him a little bit more. And he's a role model. She's a role model for the prison, right? So they're a role model. And she's carrying on watching. And according to that activity, however they're progressing in that activity of sincerity, they get more facility. They get more trust. They get more responsibilities. They start working for the queen even though they're in the prison. That's why it says that, there's one verse, that you're liberated. Even though you can be in the material world, you can be liberated. Please forgive me, I don't remember the verse. Someone remember the verse? Yeah, yes, yeah, Hare Dasa, yeah, that one. So even in the material world, you can purify yourself as much as this person is doing in the prison, and they're completely purified. And now they're working for the queen. So now they're not actually part of the prison. You could call them a minister or a secretary, a secret agent of the queen. That's what Srila Prabhupada is saying here. The whole civilization to come under proper direction, one should act like the agent of the Lord. I can't find it in the purple, but they should become an agent, a secret agent. As a kid, I was interested in secret agents. But they should become secret agent of the Lord. They should start working for the queen inside the prison. And after some time, because of good behavior, maybe the queen likes that person there because they're doing such a good job, or they get boosted up to the kingdom and they can enjoy with the queen. Same facility, same opulence as the queen, say mukti, this mukti, this mukti. So that's the example that Bhakti Charamaj has given, and that's the choice that we have in our Krishna consciousness also. How much can we work for Krishna while he's watching us? Don't try and see God, Srila Prabhupada says, try and be seen by God. So that's just a conclusion, that little story, that prison analogy is a conclusion from what I understood in the purport. And I'll finish here, and also thank you for your attention and forgiveness of any mistakes. Thank you, Hare Krishna. Yeah, I'll take questions if you want also.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you for your class. Amongst many points, one that stood out to me was about minimizing our needs, finding our limits. And it reminded me of something Anchanga Prabhu shared with us last year about how when our tapasya doesn't match our level of purity, then it can lead to burnout. And I think even like last year, we experienced it sometimes when, we'd go Mangalasti every day and I thought I was being blissed out throughout the day. I thought I was situated in mode of goodness. I was very calm. I was stable. But in reality, I was just tired. So, how do you find that limit? How do you know where that line is? And how do you bring yourself to awareness when you're crossing that line and not stay in illusion like I was thinking I was in the mode of goodness when I was just tired? Thanks.
If I understood your question correctly, you're saying that Antaranga Prabhu told you that tapasya and purity has to be balanced. And if you're doing a lot of tapasya, like coming to the morning program, then you may be feeling tired. You were thinking that throughout the day you were blissed out, but actually you were tired. So the tapasya was too much Mangalarti potentially. That's not the conclusion. Is that the question, though? Is that what the question is? Like, where's the limit of how much tapasya you can do?
Yeah, more or less. Like, how do you find your limit, and how do you know when you're minimizing your needs to an appropriate extent? Like, it's not too far.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for the question. I think I understood it now. So, how do you know when you're safe to do this amount of tapasya because you have this amount of purity to be able to do that tapasya? I mean, also I have the same experience, and in the beginning of Krishna consciousness, also if I'll just reflect on this one, we do try and do a lot of austerity, but we have literally no purity in the beginning. We're going to Mangalarti every day, and we're struggling to wake up in the morning. Everyone has struggles to wake up in the morning. That's okay, even seniors. I didn't see any seniors having trouble so far, but in the beginning there's less purity, so it's hard. You have to like push. And so Krishna, in this point also, Krishna gives some taste there, initial taste, so you can continue. Like neophytes, they get what's called chayabhav in kirtan. You know, they get some ecstatic symptoms, which helps them to get taste for Mangalarti and wake up in the morning. But to go back to the question, how much austerity to do if you're ready for it, and how do you know you're ready for it, depending on your purity? For me, it comes through mistakes and failing at the austerity. But also to reflect, Krishna consciousness is austere, but it's supposed to be inspiring also. You should only take austerity if it's inspiring you to do it, not just whimsically. I mean, we have to do also in the beginning, we have to follow instructions. But when we take on added austerity, it should be inspiring to us, otherwise it won't be nourishing for us. So it comes through experience, but also introspection, that if you should feel like you're enjoying the austerity, because austerity is normally enjoyed in Krishna consciousness. Not like we're fasting till 2 in the morning or 5 in the morning and we're chanting rounds all night. That, and if it's blissful, you're doing the austerity is done in a proper way because it's inspiring. But if I'm falling asleep and going around and trying to stay awake and I'm not enjoying the austerity, because it's a blissful process. At least this is my understanding. It's a blissful process. All the austerity that we're doing is actually blissful. It's bringing us closer to Krishna. So we can understand that when the austerity is actually making me unnourished spiritually, then that may be a little too much austerity and we can reduce. But we can carry on trying to do austerity because we can push ourselves and see where our limit is. So that's where the experience part comes in. I don't know if anyone else has any suggestions or comments on that, but I hope it helped.
Thank you.
Mataji has. Push it up? Yeah. Yeah, that's working now, yeah.
Haribo. Oh, thank you very much for your answer, because this is exactly what I was asking, what I was thinking about for a long time. And I've been listening to some sort of like psychology speakers, you know, who have channels on YouTube. And I just remembered somebody saying something similar along this topic, that if we deny our needs in unhealthy way, they will come back to be fulfilled in an unhealthy way.
Sorry, I didn't hear that. Sorry.
He was just saying how if we deny our needs in an unhealthy way, then they will bounce back to be fulfilled in an unhealthy way.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it is a really good point that you were making. I just wanted to make a comment that we actually have to enjoy spiritual practice, and this is the way to actually fulfill our needs in a healthy way. And I think it's really important to keep this in mind, because like Prabhu was saying, that there will be burnout, or devotees would you know, it would be too much, because it's actually unhealthy to be miserable for the soul, because soul is happy. So I think this is our ultimate need, to actually be happy. And the only way to be happy is with Krishna. And this is the healthy way of fulfilling our real needs. Mm-hmm. So thank you very much. Thanks. I just wanted to make this comment just because I felt like you made a good, you know, point that ultimately kind of came as an answer to what I was wondering about. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. If I understood you correctly, you're saying that if we try and decrease our needs in an unhealthy way, they'll come back, they'll bounce back and make us do something unhealthy naturally as a result of karma. So the best way is to do austerity with enjoyment and with good health, and that's done in devotional service with Krishna. Did I understand you correctly?
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you for the class. You mentioned about decreasing our false necessities of life, but sometimes I find that these false necessities are very lucrative, despite like understanding that this has practically no benefit for me. Like, for example, recently, like, I've been thinking about getting an Apple Watch, but I know it's really not going to make any difference in my life. But nonetheless, it still comes to my mind every like couple of weeks. It's not really going to add anything, because I can still keep fit now, you know? Like, I can still do anything. Like, it's not going to add anything, but still it comes to my mind. So I'm just thinking, why is it still coming to my mind? And what can we do to get it out the mind? Because if it's not out the mind, eventually I'll just go and buy it, you know?
No, thank you for your question. If I understood you correctly, you're saying that every couple of weeks you have a desire to get an Apple Watch. But you know that it's not going to be so helpful in your devotional service. But if the desire is staying there, you're going to get it at the end of the day. So your question is, do I need that Apple Watch? And if I don't need it, how do I remove that desire? Is that your question? Or how do I know if I actually need something that I'm having doubts about if I need it? Yes, a good question. As first things that are coming up to my mind, we have material desires to enjoy false necessities because we're in the mode of darkness, that Srila Prabhupada is saying. And if it's... the thing is, like, for example, if we're doing... Everything is a part for devotional service. So how can I serve Krishna better? And in what consciousness do I have that desire also? Is it a desire to actually be healthy? Do I want to look cool? These are things that I was also thinking about myself. What's my intention to get that? You have to do a little introspection. But if the introspection doesn't come, and that's also okay. You can ask seniors, do I really need this? Siksha Guru is helpful in this situation if it's that... if it's coming back and you don't want to waste money. But also you can start making plans to give it as a gift to someone who can actually utilize it in a proper way, like a guru, like a senior devotee, because we can trust them to use it in the best way possible. You can have the satisfaction of buying it. Then you can use that in devotional service. What's that verse? Gohyatam akhyati prichati. You can use it talking to devotees, giving gifts, exchanging prasadam, revealing the heart. You can utilize that for devotional service. Give it to someone who can utilize it, like senior devotees. And or you can start making plans of how you can use it for your own Krishna consciousness and actually come to some understanding that, yeah, maybe it will help me with my health. If it really will, like, is it needed to have a Lamborghini, or is it needed to have this car? But what's your service for Krishna first? Why do you need to go that fast? Do you need to be that strong? Like working out, like devotees work out also. But do they need to be that strong for doing the service? If yes, if the intention is yes, even though it doesn't need it because they're all cool, but the intention is there, they're utilizing their desire for Krishna. They're utilizing that desire for Krishna. They'll be purified. I don't need to eat so much sweet. I'll stop soon. But if I carry on eating sweet, that's Mahaprasadam, the desire will be purified. Of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is saying, don't don't have these things. But if I keep having these, Bhakti Charamaj was asked that question actually. The person asked, I won't mention his name, he said, I'm eating so much, I just can't help it. And Bhakti Charamaj says, keep eating. It will purify you. So, I hope that answered your question. If someone else can give some reflection. Yes, Prabhu. Jason, Prabhu.
I'm just going to pipe in here. In support of Prabhu's in thinking about buying the Apple Watch, I think the Apple Watch can be used in many ways for Krishna consciousness. He can get reminders of when his seva is coming. He can call people that he needs to with the phone. He can, as you say, he can stay a little bit fit, stay trim, stay fit for Krishna. Depends on the consciousness of how it's... anything you buy depends on the consciousness of how you intend to use it, I think. So it can be a burden, or it can be become a spiritualized watch because it's used in service of Krishna.
You're saying that we can utilize it in Krishna's service?
Yeah,
and it's depending on your consciousness.
Yeah, I can think of many ways that you can use that. Let's say seva reminders, for example. Mm-hmm. So you make sure you're not late for your seva.
So Jason Prabhu's planning for you, Karan Prabhu, now. So take the Siksha Gurus come in. Sorry, Prabhu? Loving exchanges.
The philosophy of Yukta Vairagya that's being talked about here. Radhanath Swami said one time, I remember, it's a very high philosophy and we shouldn't try to utilize everything until we're ready. That's why traditionally monks have very few things, because there's a tendency to misuse things when we're not spiritually advanced. Mm-hmm. So when we become very, very purified, then we can use everything. Srila Prabhupada utilized everything for Krishna. But we must also know the level that we're at, because if we take too much opulence at an early stage, it can mess us up. So I just wanted to mention that.
Thank you. Thank you. So, Prajan Prabhu, yes.
Hare Krishna. This whole class was meant for me. Actually, when you talked about how to handle those things that you don't need. And Mother Kalangana would always pass it on. If she didn't need that thing, she would pass it on to somebody that needed. But not only that, I'm going through a very painful situation personally, which means I have to move. First, I had to make a move from a cupboard where I lived. And then I end up with a room that is in excess of my needs.
Mm-hmm.
I fell into the trap of filling it. And it was ridiculous. I'm now in a very awkward situation where I have to make another move. Mm. And I'm just having a room maybe half the size. And it's much like you say, it's Achihara. You've got to be careful of this. Because there's so many books. And now I have to find a way of distributing books to help me in my situation. But I can't just throw them out. So it's very, very difficult for me. It's very painful. So what I can suggest to anybody, your advice that Ananta gave you was very nice, actually. It was very helpful for me. Because I know the pain I'm going through now, and just be careful. And you can live a brahmachari life wherever you are, and you've got to know that. And directly somebody likes and know you like something, all of a sudden it comes your way. Oh my God, that's the nightmare too. You know, somehow. I've become a servant of my senses, actually. And now, in this move, and also in old age, I don't know how to handle it, actually. I'm just taking one moment at a time. And the advice you gave to me today is that I know what I have to do at breakfast time. get a hot drink. I've got prasad back at the thing. I must use. That's it. You know, so beware. Go for the simple life, the simple advice, and don't get books you can't read. Okay.
Thank you, Prabhu. Thank you. Pantrar Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Jagat Guru Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Premanande, Hari Hari Bol.